Berkeley, that beautiful city of Berkeley. The hooray for the city of Berkeley, and if zero waste commission.
Are you interested in radio, but not quite sure how to get involved? CITR is the place for you. We are a volunteer-driven campus and community radio station with a variety of volunteer opportunities. Want to become an on-air programmer? Learn about promotions? Maybe become a news or arts reporter? Come learn about all the ways you can become involved at CITR. Volunteer orientations are held on the first Monday of every month at 6:30 p.m. If the first Monday falls on a statutory holiday, the orientation moves to the second Monday. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Well, 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 welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend this hour with us, we are really, really, really glad to have you. I think, you listeners out there, you know that I talk time in, time out about how we live in a fast food culture, how things were so tuned in these days, all these things that were created to make our life simpler in terms of technology, keep us plugged in, and sometimes we work even harder. Our stress levels, where stress used to be an unusual thing, now it is very common for us to deal with this. And you've probably heard me joke about it, that I'm really glad that I'm not a kid growing up in these times. And what do we need to do for children so that way, when they're dealing with things, and that it could be a little bit simpler? Because sometimes I'm on Facebook and it actually makes me shudder, where I'm like, gosh, you know, I can't imagine being a kid and having people writing on my wall, and especially going to school in this day and age, and what kind of things that we can do to protect our kids, what type of things are going out there, etc., because there is cyberbullying that's going on. And I've got two lovely filmmakers with me tonight. I know Jennifer quite well, and Arun I've just met today, who's the director of the film as well. So welcome to the show.
Cheers, nice to meet you. Thank you for hosting us.
You're welcome. And please tell me, what is the film called? What's the working title?
Well, right now the working title of the film is called Don't Feed the Trolls.
Don't Feed the Trolls, I like it.
It comes from an internet meme, as it were, whereas you don't want to encourage more trolling, which is a form of online bullying and online harassment. And Don't Feed the Trolls is sort of an expression, as in don't continue harassing people. So in a way, it's sort of the message of our film for cyberbullying, because all it takes is one person to step back and stop the bullying. And so in a way, you're not feeding the troll anymore. So that's sort of, the title's come about organically through an interview we had with one of the students here at UBC. And she was talking about how it's encouraged online to not feed the trolls. And if you don't feed the trolls, then eventually they'll stop harassing you. If you ignore the bullies, then they'll go away, as it were.
Bullies are bullies because they feel empowered. And that empowerment is provided by the people who are the witnesses of it. So, yes, that's the message we want to bring with this documentary.
And so you said it's about 15 minutes long, so it's going to be a short. And are you in pre-production right now, post, or where are you at in terms of the process?
Yeah, we're in pre-production right now. We are having pre-interview with SFU, PhD professors, UBC professors from the psychology and education department. Also, we already have pre-interviews with the Vancouver School Board. They were very supportive with us. We have a pre-interview also with Merlin Horton. He's the founder of the Safe Online Outreach Society.
Safe Online Outreach Society.
Yes.
What is their mandate with? I'm not familiar with that one.
Merlin has worked for over 20 years given lectures to teachers and parents from different schools here in Vancouver. Mm. She's a really expert in the sexual online harassment, and has also like tried to prepare parents and create awareness around them. And there's a lot of lack of communication between parents and teachers. Mm-hmm. So her goal is just not that the question is not how to control your kids, it's just be able to have build that trust between youth and teachers and between youth and parents, right? So that's what she was trying. That's what she's trying to do, and she's helping us a lot too.
Okay, and what does she propose needs to happen for that to fall into place? Because I know it's not an overnight solution, but what are some of the steps that just through when you've spoken to her that she's suggested that we might need to do just to move forward on that?
Well, a lot of it's just promoting awareness with parents and educators. It
okay.
seems that there's often a gap in terms of what parents recognize for their kids going online.
Mm-hmm.
They often don't see that the virtual world that the kids inhabit so much of the time today is so closely in time with the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're online, that is their world. And when they're offline, they're still taking part of that world with them. The lines are very blurred now these days,
yes.
whereas 15, 20 years ago, the computer was very separate. It wasn't something that you took home with you and wasn't something that was constantly involved with your lives. But when you have things like iPhones and smartphones, you're constantly online, you're constantly mm-hmm. plugged in. So a lot of it is just promoting awareness with parents to say, listen, if your kid's online, they're always online, especially these days growing up online.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit, they're still getting used to the notion that the real and the virtual are so intertwined in the students' lives these days.
And it really is. It's interesting. I was actually reading an article probably about a week ago, or possibly on Twitter, I'm not quite sure, just in regards to just using the cell phones in the classroom as opposed to confiscating them and actually going with the technology
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to fight against the flow of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were just talking to a teacher today, and he teaches high school, and he's actively trying to promote the use of cell phones and Twitter and online chat in the classroom as well, instead of shunning it,
mm-hmm.
but using it as a tool to promote more integration with the classroom and with the students and with the teachers as well. Because he's, in his mind, there's no sense fighting it. I mean, you can't fight it these days. You might as well bring it in and make the most out of it as
mm-hmm.
well. And even when he does his presentations on cyberbullying, he gets the students to text in their answers, and he's getting them mm-hmm. to phone in their answers. Just using their mobiles when in the classroom, and he finds they're much more actively engaged
mm-hmm.
because this is the medium that they're used to. This
yeah.
is the platforms that they're used to. So, and they become much more excited and willing to participate when they all pull out their phones and they're all texting in their answers. And he says he gets more results, and kids and students are a little more comfortable as well
mm-hmm.
Posting and sending what they have to say, as opposed to getting up and standing in front of the whole class and saying, I've been cyberbullied. But if you can send it over text, it makes it a little easier for them to...
It makes it more anonymous in
yeah,
a way.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think as well, you're also they're taking a means of communication, which is what this has all been, the technology is advanced for, because
mm-hmm.
we want to be able to communicate better with people. So actually using it the way it's supposed to be done. And one of the points you mentioned at the top of the show was just in regards to the fact that communication just doesn't stop. At the end of the day, it keeps
yeah.
going. And by embracing that in the classroom, I could see that of a lot of value, where you can take that and have it continue. So it's integrating that within life. So it's not just the 9 to 3.
No.
This is what I learned today. Okay, it's over. I'm going to close my book. I'm going to forget about homework.
Yeah.
But actually being able to engage that way too.
And the same thing with bullying. Bullying in the past, it ended when you left school.
Mm.
The bullies would be gone and you wouldn't see them until the very next day, whereas if you go home, you're still taking it with me. You're still reading the posts online. You're still getting texts. You're still getting harassed outside of school. So it's constant. It's 24/7. It's not just at school from, as you said, from 9 to 3,
mm-hmm.
but it's as soon as you wake up, it's as soon as you go to sleep, it's always around you. So that's why we're trying to promote more awareness that
mm-hmm.
with the students, and more specifically with the parents and the educators.
Yeah, especially because There's a necessity, and I can understand the concerns about the parents being concerned about what their kids do online. And okay,
sorry not to distract you.
No, it's perfect. So parents don't say, kids don't say anything to their parents because they don't like, because parents don't understand how technology is important for them. They're they want to block their internet services, so they don't tell their parents because they don't want to lose that privilege.
Hmm.
It's 41% of them, like it's a high rate.
41%.
They mm-hmm. prefer to just being cyberbull, rather than tell their parents.
Wow.
And that's why we want to create awareness and be able to tell the parents. Mm-hmm. That it's not, the question is not how to control them. It's the question is like, be able to create a bridge between your kid and you, and like he can trust you to tell, you know, mom, I have been cyberbullied by this person. Like, what can we do? Or, like, could you give me some advice? Rather than, no, I would cut your internet services, and you are only. It's impossible
yes.
these days. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's really part of their life. It's not a part. But it's not a parallel world that they like have online and offline.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there. Like our room sets are like all the time, they're constantly blocked with technology.
Yeah. And it's challenging because I think ever since, I don't think in terms of history, since probably the beginning of telephone or email,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard for parents to lead because of the fact this is something new in terms of technology.
Mm-hmm.
This is the age of technology
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Oh,
and
very much so.
Trying to be able to understand it where it's something that the kids are a little bit more advanced in many ways. So
yeah, well, we've found that a lot of kids are going home and teaching their parents and how to use a computer. And
yeah.
especially in a city like Vancouver where we do get a lot of immigrants coming in. From outside of the country, the kids seem to pick it up a lot quicker, and then they're going home and showing their parents, oh, this is a mouse, this is a keyboard, and there still is a bit of a technology gap with a lot of people coming in, and
mm-hmm.
the kids, they just get it so fast these days, and they're just surrounded by it all the time.
They are.
And then when they go home, they have to show your parent.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of parents, it almost becomes quite a barrier because they're scared. They don't really know how to adapt to it as quickly as they can. So,
well, it's also hard to give legal advice as well
mm-hmm.
in regards to it's like, okay, somebody calls you a name on Facebook, and how do you deal with that? Because technically, yes, it is slander.
Yeah.
But it's like, how are you going to fight this battle for your kid? So I can understand why they'd want to just shut it off because it just makes it simpler. And in some ways, even though it doesn't, it just manifests the problem. But because you're not controlling it.
Yeah, I think the natural response is just to turn it off
mm-hmm.
and just say, okay, well, no more Facebook for you. But that, the post is still there. Everybody is still reading it. And realistically, I think you're just putting your head in the sand and ignoring the problem. You're not dealing with the
mm-hmm.
issues at all. And it's not going to go away. I mean, shutting off the computer isn't going to keep your kid from going offline.
No.
They're going to find ways, whether through its phone or through friend's house or through school's computers. They're going to find a way to be online.
Mm-hmm.
And taking away the computer at home is almost worse than being bullied. I mean,
you're taking
social life. Yeah, you're taking away half of their life almost these days.
Yeah.
Their online life is so closely related to who they are as a person, and they're constantly trying on new identities online.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're shutting that door, it's like you're almost shutting off a part of who they are as well,
mm-hmm.
Which is worse than being bullied for a lot of students.
Yeah. You used the word trolling, which I found really interesting in regards
yeah.
to that. And in terms of sexuality as well, where there's the bullying within their actual peers. There's also bullying sometimes with sexual predators, which I know the Children of the Street Society actually had a whole campaign, which they won a few awards for, where it was called Predator Watch, actually, just keeping an eye online for just creepy people who are pretending to be other children in the chat rooms, on Facebook, etc. So it's kind of creepy. There was something a couple weeks ago, actually, where there were 30-plus-year-old guys who were offering free booze and for girls that they wanted to come party with them, and it was some penthouse downtown. And I looked at all the ages, and, of course, it popped up with all the, you know, the young kids, and they were all in high school still, which kind of horrified me a little bit. And then a couple days later, there was an article about it in the paper, and I was like, wow.
Yeah. Well, that's, we're a little wary of scaring parents as well, because we don't want to, we don't want to make them frightened of having their kids be online, but we still, we, what we're trying to do is promote awareness more than anything as to what's going on. But because it seems like a lot of parents are frightened of online predators, and so their gut reaction is to say, no more of this, let's just shut it off completely. And so we're not, we're trying to make sure we don't scare them into...
No, but they do need to be aware,
and
perhaps part of it could start with just even actually getting education where they can spend that time going on YouTube or something like that and taking a look at Facebook. How do you fix, like, your privacy settings, for example, making sure that they're super high? If there's creepy kids in the class, that they can't write on the wall where you actually have it set up, or you block those people so they're not on there. Those kinds of things, being able to report if it's, say, a picture where they've like photoshopped somebody else's face on a different body, those kinds of things, that's done, or they're being really grossly unfair, because kids can be really, really cruel.
The idea is like bringing the parents, like, allowed like parents allow their kids to be able to explain how do they interact with technology. When they got that understanding of how they work and how they interact and how important it is to them, they will be able to manage all things. If they don't know how Facebook works or they don't know what's going on online, it's impossible for them to be able to understand. And the first answer will be like, just shut down the computer. And is the easy answer, but it's not a solution.
No, it's a matter of becoming educated for it. So whether or not there be more seminars, or the teacher that you're mentioning earlier actually embracing using more technology within the classroom and really fighting for that and actually winning and seeing how that works, because of course it's going to keep evolving, so there's going to be more and more options available, which is ironic because the reason why this stuff was created in the first place is to help us communicate better.
Parents and teachers should bring guidance to youth. They need people that they can trust, and they, like, they can feel that they have support. And there's a, like, Karen Brown, she's a SFU teacher, and he proposed a term called cyber civility, which I found interesting because it's your duty as a parent, as a teacher, to always provide. There's a sense of that internet is free, and because it's free, you're able to say whatever you want. But there's supposed to be like a sense of civility also in this being online, not only being outside meeting people. It's like, try to be polite and embrace good things about technology rather than attack. And parents need to know how how are these interactions in order to bring the guidance they need to their kids.
And it comes right down to etiquette when it really comes down to it. And there was a great book that came out, which I cannot remember the name of, unfortunately, where it's basically etiquette for email, etiquette for online in terms of whether you're on Twitter, Facebook. You know, most kids won't be on LinkedIn. But, you know, at that stage, it's a matter of just keeping it balanced and what is okay, what is not, and really keeping that. I do find it interesting, though, in regards to the fact that we have created these these technologies to help us communicate, but yet a lot of times even in just regular relationships we have challenges with that. So yeah, one of my favorite books is Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages, where it's like, where sometimes even within a couple, like the guy brings home flowers for the girl and she's like, oh thanks, puts them in a vase and just smiles sweetly, where what she'd really like him to do is make her dinner once in a while, because her love language, for example, is acts of service as opposed to gifts. Which, and usually a lot of times I always ask people, even with their kids, it's like, take a look at what they do for you. And usually that's how you can usually figure out somebody's love language really fast. So whether it's your best friend who is the one who maybe writes you those cute little notes or sends really awesome emails where it's about caring and stuff, which perhaps their love language is about words of acknowledgement. You've got your acts of service, as I was mentioning, where I know for some people it's taking out the trash, that kind of stuff. Other people it's acts of physicality. A girlfriend of mine today was actually just telling me about one of her boyfriend who they'll be at a Toastmasters meeting and he always likes putting his arm around her and stroking her shoulder, and she hates it because she thinks it's inappropriate at that stage, whereas I was like, no, actually I'd be okay if my boyfriend did that to me, just within reason. So those kinds of things. And of course quality of time, because that's really important too. And I think I said words of acknowledgement, but I'm not quite sure, where it can be actual words where it's written down. Other times it will be just actually being able to say I love you, or I really love whatever it is about you, and actually being able to recognize that and educating our children about that too, about the different ways of communication too, that there's different ways. I honestly think that should be part of school curriculum.
Yeah, no, I hardly agree with that. And that seems to be one of the common not complaints, but the common cries in terms of we've talked to some psychologists and some doctors here at UBC, and their biggest message for parents and educators is open dialogue with your with your kids. Know what they're doing. Talk to them about what they're doing online. They use the metaphor as if you wouldn't send your 12-year-old to the mall and say, okay, well, don't talk to strangers and that's it. I mean, you would have certain guidelines, and that's what it's like when kids are going online. I mean, it's a whole universe, it's a whole world, and they're essentially free to go wherever they want, but they're not really given many rules or instructions in proper online behavior and how to chat to people. I mean, it seems like we're still learning and growing up with the internet, and we're still trying to catch up as a society as to what it means and how do we train up our children to properly behave online. And it seems that's what they're calling out for, is more parents just getting involved with the online behavior of their kids, because a lot of them, they just don't know, or they don't have the time, or I mean parents are quite busy these days trying to balance a host of things. So the last thing they need is just one more thing to be watching out for. But there is certainly a call to at least sit down with your kids and say, listen, this is appropriate, this is inappropriate, this is how you handle this situation, and just walk through and every now and then check your history and see what your kids are doing, but keep that dialogue open. And that seems to be the biggest help when it comes to dealing with issues like cyberbullying, and that way your kids are more comfortable coming to you as well, knowing that there is that open dialogue already.
How does that evolve, especially in a diverse culture like Vancouver? We've got, like, for example, we've got a really huge South Asian population, Asian population as well, especially Chinese in the city, and quite diverse in so many different ways. And, of course, in terms of culture, you're bringing in a lot of thought process. So I know I've had Dr. Faisal on the show, which he is a multicultural educator and teaches at Cap College, as well as is one of the first actually multicultural relationship experts. And I'm just curious in regards to that, where there's communication sometimes just because of the family structure. And I know he said for sometimes Asian and South Asian families, because it's almost more, as opposed to an individual, it's almost more of a collective in terms of the thought process, etc., which sometimes the kids tend to hide a little bit more because they don't know how to say anything, because if it's supposed to be collective as opposed to individual, where it's sounding like in regards to embracing like the internet and having those discussions, it sometimes can be more of almost like a Western philosophy in terms of that, because the kid's thinking of them as individuals. Mm-hmm. Whereas we do have the collectism as well, where a family is really held really high, really respected as well. And just if there's any thoughts that you're thinking just in regards to some of the research you've done so far, in regards to what the parents say, especially where it's more of almost a collectivism, this family structure, what they can be doing. Which does that mean that we may need to create things like perhaps, which I don't know if that organization that you were talking about has, where they've got some of the materials available in different languages perhaps, or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the materials is available in different languages. The role of geography when it comes to online etiquette is still a fairly new area.
It is.
One of the ladies we talked to, that's actually what she's studying right now. And it's a fairly brand new realm. That's especially in the city of Vancouver, that gives you a wide range of nationalities and whatnot. One of the funny stories that she did tell us is some of the Eastern Asian families that come over, they're a little more concerned with how their posture is in front of the computer and whether or not they're sitting up straight and whether or not they're straining their eyes with the screen. And they're not so much concerned with actually what's going on with the computer itself.
That's interesting.
But they're more concerned about whether or not they're sitting properly at their computer.
Ergonomics.
Yeah, exactly. But they're less concerned about what their kids are interacting with online, and they don't really consider, okay, well, they're at the computer, they're in the home, they're safe, they're inside the living room,
exactly,
and then they're okay, they must be fine, they're of course they're safe, I can see them right there. And but they don't really take the time to really delve into what their kids are actually doing online. They just assume that they're safe because they're in the home.
Yeah, and actually there's a language barrier which makes for them more difficult to understand what's going on with their kids and the computers, right? So they think, they are safe. I mean, they're at home. Like, I'd rather have it and see the right away here in the living room rather than maybe go outside and I don't know anyone. I don't know what are they doing, right? But the language barrier is a huge deal too, especially in Asian cultures.
Yeah, and especially because so much of online behavior is with the English language right now. I mean, almost everything online is done in English language.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of immigrants that do come over, and they don't, the parents or grandparents don't speak any English or are very limited, when they get online, it's nearly impossible for them to be communicating or even know what their kids are doing online.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, not only is there a technology gap, there's a informational gap, there's a language gap, there's just a lot of holes that need to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ultimately what we're trying to do with this documentary, is to help fill some of those roles so the parents can spend 10 to 15 minutes and watch this and think, okay, now I have some better tools, and now I sort of understand what's going on, why they're acting the way that they are, and now I have a new approach on how to deal with my kids going online, and what does that mean when they are online, and what does that mean when I see their face buried in their cell phone, recognizing that they are constantly engaging and being online, and that this world that they inhabit is a real world for them and not some sort of separate entity.
So it's not a video game, in other words.
No, exactly.
It's actually choose your own adventure, but for real.
Yeah, exactly. It seems that's a bit of a generational gap when it comes to what does a computer mean. Whereas 15, 20 years ago, a computer is something you did your business on, your work on, and then you left it at home. It's not something that you would assume, okay, this is, I'm constantly going to be involved in interacting with this. Whereas kids growing up these days, the computer is always around them. They're constantly online. They're constantly involved with the virtual world. There's no line between the two of them anymore.
Even mobiles.
Yeah.
Like 54% of teenagers already have their own cell phones. And they carry those cell phones everywhere. It's part of their life. They have pictures there, they have the music there, they have messages there, they have email, they can get into Facebook, they can get into Twitter, they can go to chat, and it's, everything's there. Like, it's not even now, it's not only computers. You have iPad, you have a iPad, you have iPhone, you have a lot of different mobile devices that, like, helps you being connected with all your social networks, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's important for that. One of the challenges is what to do in terms of groups, etc. So, for example, there's a lot of schools that have things online, and I've always been curious who actually moderates that kind of stuff. Does the school itself do it, or is it set up by a student? And I'm thinking of things like, say, for example, comments under like a photo, for example. Those types of things, where especially for high schools, where it's almost like, it's like you used to get your annual at the end of the year. Now it's almost like an evolving, almost like a Google document online, the way it's constantly up there. And once it's up there, it's up there. You can't change things that much. Like, sure, you can take down a post and things like that. And if you're the administrator for certain things, you can take that down. But and I'm thinking even for young girls, because the average age of entry into street life for street kids in BC is 12, according to the MacCready Association, and 14 across the country. So say you run away as a little kid, and, you know, you're exploring, like, alcohol, drugs. You know, you've got all sorts of pictures of yourself online doing God knows what. And then years later, it's like, it's not like, say, 30 years ago where something like that happened. You could move to another part of the city or new, you know, another country and start fresh, where that stuff kind of follows you, even if you do change your name, because legally you have to actually put your name change in, etc. So it's like you can't really get away from your past. Where it's interesting, because I know you're saying with online that you get to try all these different identities. And I guess my question is that the right platform to be experimenting with those different identities?
Well, I don't know if it is the right platform, but it's going to happen. And it's I don't think there's any point in fighting at this point. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle, as it were, right now. And kids are embracing it. I mean, there's the nice thing about the internet is that it offers anonymity, but it's a double-edged sword in that you can be anybody that you want. Whereas before, you'd show up to school, and let's say you're a jock, you're almost always a jock, or you're a goth, or whatever it is
it's
you're
very
into.
Breakfast Club.
Yeah,
yes.
maybe a little bit. But online, you can be whatever you want. And if, let's say, you want to go in this chat room and hook up with these people, that's fine. And then the next day you can be somebody completely different. It does offer a lot of different ways for students to be trying on new identities, especially in these formative years.
Yes.
They're 13, 14, 15 years old and going online and being essentially whoever they want to be. But whereas before, if you showed up to school one day as a cowboy, let's say, for example, and the next day you show up and you're somebody completely different, you would get laughed and you'd go home and you would never do that again. You would probably stick with that one key identity. Whereas nowadays, you can try on whatever you want.
I see what you mean. So in terms of fashion, etc.
Yeah,
and
anything.
Different people.
Yeah.
And you can feel like you belong in some group, right? Not necessarily, maybe in school you don't feel like you don't belong, but maybe you can get online and you see like groups that have the same interests like you, and you can be able to feel like you belong somewhere.
So you're not alone. So if you are being bullied, for example, that you can actually step out of that and actually connect. What about things like in terms of cyberbullying? I'm just thinking in terms of sexting, which there are a lot of cases in the States in regards to that. Moving forward, I know I did a show on it a while ago, and I found it really interesting just that we're, you know, just not thinking and sending naked photos of each other. And with that, if that ended up online, because of course you can forward stuff, etc. So once something's literally out there.
Well, I think that's what a lot of what the educators that go and talk to schools, that's the one thing that they tend to drill in, is that anything you post online is permanent and there's a record for it. So when she goes to give presentations to schools, she'll pull up pictures of students actually in the presentation, and they're amazed that, oh my gosh, this picture that I posted a few months ago is still floating around online, and it's there forever. And because of the way that the brain develops when you're that young, you don't really, it's almost biologically impossible to be thinking beyond the next year or two, you can't really think, you're not really thinking, oh, what am I going to be doing when I'm 25, 30, mm-hmm. never mind, 45, 55, let's say you're running for politics, or let's say you're applying for a job, and you're not thinking about these stupid pictures that you posted when you're 14 years old of your friend acting stupid. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's not, you're not thinking such on such a grand scale. And so getting them to realize that this is permanent, this is forever, is a bit of a jump. And once they begin to recognize that, okay, I got to start thinking about this in terms of its repercussions beyond today and beyond tomorrow.
So what are some of the tips that we can give parents and educators in terms of doing it? And also youth, if you're listening out there as well, the things that you might want to think about, because I don't think it just pertains to youth in regards to this.
No,
this, I think there's cyberbullying in offices because I think deep down we're all little kids inside still. You know, no matter how, if we're 80 years old or like four.
Yeah, oh no. I think the biggest thing is have dialogue and don't be afraid of it. Confront it and be open and honest with yourself and with the person that's bullying you as well. And if you are being bullied, talk to your parents, talk to your friends, get it out there. Don't hide it all in and just assume that this is only happening to you, because it is happening to mm-hmm. a lot of people. And don't feel alone. I mean, it's easy to say that. But just take the time to step back and realize that it does happen to a lot of people, and you're not alone. You don't have to face this alone.
Mm-hmm.
And with parents, I think the biggest thing is become actively engaged with what your children are doing online. Take an interest, whether it's 10, 15 minutes a day and just going through what they're looking at online, but become actively involved with their online life. Friend them on Facebook. So it's something as simple as that. A lot of parents, they just haven't even done that yet. And mm-hmm. it's amazing how something as simple as that we take for granted can make a huge difference on how they behave online, and that way you can keep an eye on things that they're posting and what other people are posting about them online as well.
Actually, that's true. I had one of my friends who's got a 10-year-old daughter who, believe it or not, had an application on there called Lover of the Day. And I ended up telling her mom, because her daughter actually am one of her mentors, and I ended up talking to the young girl directly and explained why it was inappropriate, which she didn't really understand what the word lover meant in the grand scheme of things. And then also spoke to her mother, who's got a very open relationship with her. She's a cognitive therapist, so mm-hmm. it was really appropriate, and we were able to explain age appropriateness. But it was one of those really awkward ones, because even as encouraging perhaps like the trusted friends to friend your kid as well, I think is pretty helpful mm-hmm. too, because they may actually block a parent.
Yeah.
But with that, and then we were able to have that conversation where it's an adult that they trust, that you also, as a parent, also trust as well, I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some schools are doing youth to youth programs.
Youth to youth programs. Mm-hmm. What is that?
They pick students from older grades, and because there is not such a gap between them, they feel more comfortable telling to other students what they're are dealing with,
mm-hmm.
rather than speak with a mentor or instructor or maybe their parents.
Yeah.
Because the range of age is not
mm-hmm.
so broad. So there are like some schools are doing that. It gives a lot of pressure
mm-hmm.
to people who are in that program too, because they have to listen
yeah.
to all what other kids are needs to deal. But I think it's a good initiative. Because
mm-hmm.
they want to be listened, I think, but they don't want to feel like they're put in a wall because they don't understand.
Yeah.
So they want to be listened. Kids love to teach.
Mm-hmm.
They love to teach. They love to, like, everybody wants to be heard.
Yeah.
So start from that. I mean, you want to be heard, especially for your friends. You want to be heard for your parents. And let's start for that and allow them to tell us
mm-hmm.
what they think or what they feel or what they are dealing with, right? That's why, like, we're here for.
And one more thing, don't be afraid as well. Don't be afraid of the technology. Don't be afraid of turning on the computer and getting to know how an iPhone works. Embrace it. Sure, the kids and the students will probably get a little faster, but don't be scared of it. And just go at it, and eventually you may even find that you like it as well. Ideally.
It's true. It is just another form of communication. Mm-hmm. And in terms of being heard, I think I was actually thinking of some of the weird positives, because I'm kind of bizarre that way, so I'd be very curious to see, because I haven't seen the footage yet that you've put together. But even on Facebook, Jennifer, that's how we booked for this interview, is because I happened to see it on your Facebook feed this morning. And so that was really interesting. But in terms of being heard, I think it's also really helpful for somebody who is being bullied, where there is a massive paper trail, whereas I think I was a little kid, where the only trail there was about it, because I used to have, because my last name's very long, little kids used to chase me and make fun of my last name, and my mother said, well, sticks and stones will break your bones, break my bones, but names will never hurt me. So I ended up saying that to them, and the next thing I knew, they were chasing me with sticks and stones and spitting at me, which didn't help. And then I didn't want to tell my parents, and they ended up finding out, because I ended up with bruises all over my ribcage. So with the kids just growing up, that was just normal. Whereas now, in some ways, you really have a paper trail. So if you are friending your child on Facebook, you can see that, where it's like, okay, is that an appropriate thing? And checking in and just like, hey, how's it going? And not having those conversations, which kids always hate, like where it's like, well, actually, let's be honest, we all hate, we have to talk. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, is there anything you want to tell me? Is there anything you want to talk about? Like those kinds of things where it's just a little bit like, oh God, you know how much they know. Because everybody wants to be just treated with dignity and respect, and just making sure it's fun. But it is interesting because there is that full trail there. So it's So, and I think because of it, we are really living in a reality TV world as well. Mm-hmm. Like, just look at some of the media that's out there on, you know, if you're paying for cable and stuff like that, that you can see, like, everything from The Hills to, I can't remember what that one's called with Schnooki or whatever it's called.
Oh,
that horrible Jersey Shore. Okay, which I'm sure some of my listeners out there are probably going, how can you say it's terrible? But we really are in a fast food culture where all of us can be a star based on our social media. And it makes sense, especially when there's hormones going on all over this place. As soon as the pituitary gland starts dripping down, where one day we feel like we're a kid, next thing we do feel like an adult, and we act out, our emotions are running high, and it's easy to act out against other people. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, it does start with in terms of with the etiquette, what's right, what's wrong, what would you like other people to say about you, etc. And hopefully eventually being able to be held more accountable, because it is so public, that perhaps the bullies can be ostracized a little bit too. Mm-hmm. I guess that's one of the questions I'd love to ask, is what do you constitute as bullying these days? Because to me it would be like calling somebody a slut when they don't really know what that is. Those kinds of things, pushing, shoving, obviously physical violence, sexual violence would be that as well. But I was just curious what other types of things came up as you've been doing the documentary.
In terms of what cyberbullying is as a definition?
No, examples of cyberbullying in terms of, like, besides, like, writing things like you're a slut, or, you know, posting a picture of somebody, like, maybe it's, like, some fat kid that's got zits all over its face and going, pizza face, where it's not even that person, and putting it on their wall, and that goes viral, that kind of stuff. Or creating some dorky video where it's making fun of somebody and doing an impersonation and popping it up on YouTube. The next thing you know, it's going viral within that class and the grade.
Yeah. Well, those are all fairly common examples. The majority of cyberbullying takes place in chat rooms. So a lot of that's a little bit harder to track down. Mm-hmm. And they're just chatting back and forth, and it's very much in the moment. As opposed to posting things on Facebook or sending nasty emails. It's just them communicating back and forth online. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be where...
Yeah. You pretend to be someone else online to make another person look bad, or you send sensitive personal information about someone else. You like get excluded from different groups.
Mm-hmm.
Start receiving several text messages or emails or messages through online.
Mm-hmm.
And often
really hurt others, right? They're mean.
And yeah. Often it's often directed at teachers as well. There's a website, it's called Rate My Teacher.
Really?
Yeah, where you go online and you post comments and you say, it was originally designed for students to teach them on what to expect when you're going to be enrolling in a certain class, whatever, but now it's turned out to be just an online, almost an insult board for teachers, and it seems like most people are willing to say mean things as opposed to positive things as well.
That's awful.
It is. One of my brothers, he's a teacher, and he refuses to go on. I think he checked on it once. And he teaches grades 5 and 6, I think. But even then, there are still
stuff
comments
going
already. And a lot. Some teachers will go on it, but the majority of them will
stay. Some of the trolls go to memorial sites, and they start bullying people that commit suicide. It's really mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand the implication of how hard it will be for a family to have to deal with that. But there's a lot of things going on online. Some of them, they're not pretty.
If you could wave a magic wand and basically flash forward that, say, 30 years from now, where technology is going to be going even faster than now, what are some key things? Obviously, communication's a big one in terms of educating. Etiquette's another one. Are there any things, other things that we haven't talked about yet that you'd like to add in there, where if you're looking back 30 years from now and it's like, okay, we did our documentary now, and perhaps making a few more, because of course as it's evolving, there's going to be more things to talk about, more issues. Some key things that you think need that might actually help and benefit and enhance.
Well, I think a lot of it will just be the generation that's growing up online. It'll close a lot of the gap that is between the youth and the adults today.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be where a lot of problems are arising, is that the older generation just doesn't still really know how to properly respond to, hasn't quite grasped the mm-hmm. scope and the potential of what the internet is. So I think 30 years from now, you'll get a whole generation, two generations that have grown up online, and I think that will certainly help with a lot of ways. And the internet is still fairly young, and everybody that and it seems like a lot of the youth, they're the ones that are mainly embracing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as the internet is growing up, so are the people that are using it as well. So I would hope that the dialogue that we are having online will mature and become a little more positive and a little less negative and cynical, and using it to promote. I mean, the internet is obviously full of wonderful and amazing things, and
mm-hmm.
it's not just that people are being bullied online. Of course, there's a host of other things that are going great online as well, but it is nice to show awareness and to shine a light on the ugly parts of online behavior as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately what we're trying to do.
Teachers, it's interesting. We have a meeting today with a teacher, and he's like, use the softwares that are already disposed and people know, so you don't have to create another software. And teachers have to learn how to use the software, and students have to learn how to use it too. Just
mm-hmm.
use the tools you already have online, and people know how to get on and just take advantage of those softwares in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
So he talks about a second dialogue, which was interesting because he was in a seminar and people Twitter about what the panelist was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a double conversation. And it was the best experience he ever had. And he learned a lot because he was not only listening to the speaker, he was always listening to people who were listening in the same room with
mm-hmm.
him, what he has to say. So embrace that technology and use it for something like good. You already have it there. That's why you exclude it and keep ignoring what's something that's part of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We're going to take a really, really quick short break, and we will be back in just a sec. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
Relay for Life is the largest cancer fundraising event in Canada. It is a non-competitive event where family, friends, businesses, and communities come together to celebrate cancer survivors, remember loved ones lost, and fight back against the disease. Gather your friends and family and join the Canadian Cancer Society in this inspiring community event as we fight back against cancer. Visit relaybc.ca to register your team today. The relay takes place June 19th at the Richmond Olympic Oval. A personal fight against cancer takes courage. A community's fight takes commitment. Be there.
Learning Exchange Trek program wants you to get involved in your community. Learn about important social issues while volunteering at inner-city schools or nonprofit organizations. You'll also get to meet other UBC students in a fun and supportive environment. See how your talent and skills can make a difference in your community. Participate throughout the term or during reading week. Check out www.learningexchange.ubc.ca/CITR to find out more. Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/SASC.
And we are back at Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CATR. And if you're just joining us now, we've been talking about cyberbullying and just how you can make a difference, and about a really cool documentary that's going to be, they're doing all the preliminary interviews. And if you want to email them because you're interested in being part of the documentary, or you're curious about it, or you've got some information about some really cool research, especially all of you out of UBC or at at SFU, but we are on UBC campus, so, and you want to contact them, Asha, which email would you like to use?
You can go send us an email to cyberbullying.documentary@gmail.com.
So cyberbullying documentary.
cyberbullying.documentary@gmail.com.
Thank you. Oh, that's awesome. And are you guys on Twitter at all? Or
We just set up the email a few days ago. We're going to start tweeting it as well and getting the whole social media involved as well. I think it's almost expected for any sort of film or any sort of media out there as well.
We're looking for people who's willing to give share their experiences and like possibly be a feature in the documentary if they want.
Cool.
Yeah, if people want to send in their stories, just please contact us and we can somehow arrange to get their stories in our film, or even if they just want to send an audio clip or written word, however they want to get
or
involved.
Or video these days
video
as well.
Video is perfect as well. Any way that they just want to get involved. The big thing is just making them feel safe and inclusive as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to shine a light on this problem. Because I think a lot of people that do get picked on, that do get bullied, they tend to feel isolated and alone. And I think knowing that there are other people out there that are in the same boat as you does help. It makes you feel like you're not fighting this alone, and I think that's what we're trying to do is give people a voice, ideally.
And make them not feel so alone.
Yeah, exactly.
And any last things that I haven't asked you yet that is something that you feel is really important and why this project needs to be made? That we haven't touched on yet.
Well, one thing that I wasn't aware of is it seems there is a bit of a gender difference when it comes to cyberbullying. And girls, in general, tend to cyberbully more than boys do. Whereas typically your average bully at school would be a big kid, who generally a boy, who would pick on everybody around him. But when it comes to this whole social world, it seems like girls are much more aggressive and much more willing to slander and insult people.
Like traditional bullies mainly done by men, and cyberbullying is significantly more in women.
That's interesting, actually, because I've always felt with men and women there's a huge difference, so I can totally see that it totally starts young as well.
Yeah.
Where it's with girls, I've had that conversation where I've been with guy friends and a girl will come by and say something, and after she leaves, it's like, oh my gosh, she was so horrible. And the guy will be like, what are you talking about? She was great.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like with women, we almost have our own secret language, which every other woman in there gets it. So I can see with that where it's just like, just having that on there where it almost feels more passive aggressive in some way,
yeah,
shape, or form. So it's an easier way to do it, even though it's crueler in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the sting is a lot deeper because those words are there where you can go back and almost like a bad record where you can keep rewind. It's kind of like the breakup, not email, which is the normal thing now, but I guess, you know, a breakup text message or whatever, you go back and keep rereading. I can't believe you said that. Or like the answering machine way back in the day. So
yeah, and if somebody posts it online for everybody can read it again and again and again.
You can print the screen and have it forever.
Yeah.
That picture.
And it's floating around there forever where it's like, oh, you're the girl who got dumped by blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's brutal.
Other than that, I think overall, I think mainly just
finding the stories,
finding
out what else,
promote awareness, and if there's any message for kids and educators, just try and stay involved as much as you can. Have that open dialogue, and make them feel safe and secure, so that if they do get picked on, that they have somebody to turn to, and then they're not going to be afraid of having the online world shut off for them.
Mm-hmm.
They need to feel safe in the real and the virtual.
And what about if it's if somebody's listening out here and they're playing this podcast for their kid, and it's actually their friend who's actually being bullied, so it's not them personally, it's somebody else. Any steps in regards to taking care and perhaps trying to bridge that gap where their friend may be too scared to speak out?
Well, I think speak up on their behalf. Don't be afraid. If you do know somebody that's being bullied, talk to the person that is being bullied, and then talk to their parents, perhaps talk to their teachers, but get it out in the open and try and stop the cycle of kids being bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is to confront what's happening. Ignoring it is not going to make the problem go away. Ignoring and shutting off a computer is not going to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
But confronting the problem, shine a light on it, and get that dialogue going. That would be the best approach. It's not always the easiest, that's for sure.
No.
It can be the hardest, but in the long run, it's almost always the best.
In your research, have you found anything in regards to cyberbullying, how it is different in different countries around the world? I'm thinking just in terms of, I'd be curious, and if you haven't had this yet, I'd be very curious for you to follow up and let me know, just in regards to in some of the more war-torn countries where there's like suicide bombers and things like that, if in regards to those who have access to a different, it basically to technology, if the bullying's different there because of the amount of hate and prejudice in certain parts of the world?
Well, in Brazil, it's huge.
Okay.
There's a lot of group members and group pages on Facebook anti-cyberbullying from Brazil. And also in Korea, it's a pretty huge deal. There are some cases of a singer who she did like plastic surgeries, and a lot of and some people put a website of how many plastic surgeries, and that they put really awful things about her, and she suicide, and it was a huge deal in Korea. And actually, I have one of my friends from Vancouver Film School. He told me, like, Jen, if you need to translate your documentary in Korean, like, I will be able to help you, because I'm really concerned, because in my country, it's a really huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
So our idea is just do this documentary in English, but possibly translate it to Portuguese, Spanish, and Korean, too. So
Wow.
A lot of people want to know, and especially about the language barrier that I told you about,
yes,
it would be like really good for parents to have this material in different languages.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so much. You guys are doing a huge service, so I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be... Yes, you are a very sexy man. He's like, yes, that's right, I am very sexy.
Everybody needs to stop.
And he'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Adios.
Yes.